Hello, welcome to final week on the ITV STV Rugby World Cup podcast with me, Tom Shanklin.
And me, Di Flats.
I am looking forward to England v Wales final. If only it was, eh? What a game that would be.
Oh.
What a game that would be.
Yeah, mind you, the Welsh have lost half their lads, haven't they?
Two worlds collide, rival nations. It's a primitive fight. Yeah, we are down to bare minimum. We are down to bare minimum. I will give you that.
Do you reckon you'll beat New Zealand?
Yeah.
Talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, what? End like 65 years of hurt.
How was your flight home, fella?
It was okay. I sat next to a pod listener. I can't remember his name.
Let's go with Derek for now.
He fell asleep straight away before he even taken off. You know, like you have to wake someone if they want food or those little nuts. But went back with Japan Airlines. Look, nice plane, mate. Nice plane.
Yeah.
The movies weren't quite as up to date as BA. But that's okay. Like, I wanted to watch Rocket Man, but that wasn't on there. I watched Red Sparrow, but they cut the best scene out. It's a nudie.
What's one of the scenes? Is it a naughty one? Oh, I knew it.
And the food was a bit...
Bit av.
Yeah.
A bit ordinary, mate. It was a bit ordinary, mate.
But the flight was good. I got back, landed in Heathrow Terminal 3. My car's at Terminal 5. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm home. Bit of faffing around, but get back in good time. In good time, and guy, you know, red carpet come out for me, welcome signs, dinner cooked, champagne on ice, not champagne, I'm non-alcoholic, I'm giving the liver a rest now for a bit, and home.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got that to look forward to, it's all right, what I will say, try and get some food in your bum bag or your rucksack before you get on the plane.
You know I'm packing the heat in that fanny pack, don't you?
Yeah, the food isn't enough. It wasn't enough for me. It's not going to be enough for you. I managed to get some pancakes in a packet from one of the cafes in the airport. But even better, mate, I'd grab something before you leave from Family Mart, Lawson's or 7-Eleven. Okay?
That's my... This is good stuff.
Anyway, I saw you in a pair of Wellington boots this week on social media because that's the only way I can keep up with you and your goings on. What were you doing?
I did some Typhoon Hagibis debris removal clear up work. It's just a nice idea, really. Did it with John Smith, Springboks legend. Mate of mine since under 21s, where we played together and played at the same World Cup and shared a few
stories.
Lemonades and yeah, just nice bloke. And we went down and did that. And it's basically a really old man in a temple that was completely flooded and in a little village. And it's just like he's got probably 8 inches deep mud on his whole driveway and he can't get in or out. He's doing it a tiny bit a day. And I was like, all right, John, we got to get this cleared, mate. Yeah, we got it done. And it was sweaty work. It was a long day. He was a terrible driver. Got us in his little truck. Terrible driver.
Yeah.
And he tipped us into a rice field. Basically fell off the track.
Flats, who do you invoice for that? Do you invoice a Japanese tourist board or who?
What do you mean?
Right, for that work, for that corporate work.
That boy. Was charity.
Of course it was. I'm only joking.
It was charity, boy. Believe it or not, it's hard to believe, but now and again, people with hearts as big as mine and John.
Oh, mate, I feel bad now because it was a lovely thing you did. You've just been in the England camp, haven't you? The teams have been announced.
I invoiced for that.
Yeah, of course. Especially when you know what they're on for a win bonus. Who did you interview? What spirits were they in? Could you sense a little bit of nervousness, anticipation?
I've done everyone, boy.
Have you? Who was it this week then? Because this is the big week.
Owen Farrell. Today, Clive Woodward actually spoke to Eddie, so that'll be really nice on the telly. Owen Farrell and then Billy Vunipola, Jamie George. Yeah, they seem to be very relaxed. I just don't want to tempt fate. I just do not see them losing this game. I just don't see it.
How do you reckon all the previous World Cup winners 2003 will feel if England win?
Oh, they'll be gutted.
they will be gutted.
That's their value chopped, isn't it?
All the work dries up.
It's like poor old Benny Kay. I know, you know, he listens to this pod and Marrow's just going to steal his life, isn't he?
Unless Marrow drops one just before the line, like Benny Kay did in the final.
But Ben's still, you know, become a superstar, media superstar, despite having dropped that ball. The thing is, a lot of these World Cup winners, their success after rugby is not based on the fact they won the World Cup. That gets you a foot in the door, but you've actually still got to be good at your job, haven't you? And these guys are brilliant, so they'll be all right.
Yeah. What I would say about Ben Kay, Maratoji comparison, is that I would back Ben Kay in a dance-off there. I've seen him move, mate, and it was Patrick Swayze-esque.
I've seen Marrow move.
Nah, yeah, but mate, when you can dance the decades like Ben Kay, then you got everything in your locker.
Yeah, okay. Where are you going to watch the last two games? You're just doing a bit of corporate at the Arms Park, are you?
The home of rugby. No, I am. I'm actually going to London. I'm going to Gaucho in Piccadilly, and I'm just going to rev them up, and we're going to have a laugh. Buffalo in play.
Oh, lads alert.
Bit of Q&A, and just make them laugh, mate. Entertain. Are you not entertained?
It's just the blimmin' lads, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. That'll be a nice way to watch the game at 9 o'clock in the morning with some delicious steak.
Yeah, I mean, what you want to do is when you just got back from Tokyo, from Japan, you want to watch the game 5 hours from home at 9 a.m, don't you? That's where you want to watch it.
It's work, mate. It's work. It's what we do. You know that.
Coming up, Eddie Jones, Billy Vunipola, World Cup winners, Ben Kay and Brian Habana. We'll also digest your feedback on our team of the semis. Can't wait. It's always so positive. And do a couple more of your film court reviews. Now, Shanks is doing these today. I'm not doing them. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it, mate.
You had a long time away, mate. I can sense it.
I've had a long tour, and it's like they wouldn't ask Lowell to do this, so why are they asking me to do it? I'm out.
Eddie Jones has named his team, which seems as good a place to start as any at previewing the game. Flats.
Yeah, well, there's no change. Well, Willie Hines is injured, which is deeply sad for him. It's just what horrible news for him. And Ben Spencer's flown in straight onto the bench, and I think he's going to win a World Cup.
Yeah, we'll discuss the thinking behind Eddie's selections in a moment after we've heard from the man himself.
The great thing for us is that we've done the preparation. We're ready for this occasion. You know, we've spent 4 years getting ready for this occasion. So that's why the players can be relaxed. That's why I can be relaxed, because we know we've done the work, but we're not relaxed about knowing what's in front of us. We know South Africa is going to come hard. You know, they've got a history of being the most physically intimidating team in the world, so we've got to take that away from them. And the boys know what's ahead of them. Everyone knows what's at stake. But because we've had such a good preparation, we can go out there and play without any fear.
Now, you had a theory last week that George Ford may be dropped. You weren't saying that he was definitely going to be dropped, but you thought potentially might be, because after a great Australian performance that he wasn't selected for, they brought him back in for the All Blacks. But after that game, the semi, it's so difficult to drop anybody from that team, isn't it? After just running away with a game, dominating them completely. Imagine you were George Ford and you were dropped.
Terror.
I'd give up. Are you happy with the selection?
Yeah, I think it's great. And I'm really pleased that George Ford is playing, actually, because, well, obviously, I think he deserves it. Of course he deserves it. He's been fantastic. But one of England's best players. But I just thought he was so good in that semi-final. And more than that, I think he's so talented that he'll be great in the final. I think he's just a wonderful rugby player.
Can you say now that England played better with George Ford at 10 over Farrell? And still need Farrell in the team at 12, but they look more dangerous in attack with George Ford and Owen Farrell playing.
Yep, is that right?
Cool.
Did you see the little set two between the little bant between Gatland and Eddie Jones this week?
Yes,
I like that. I love all that.
I know. I don't know. I'm not sure why Gatland said it, to be honest.
I know. I was surprised because he's in such a vulnerable position because he hasn't made the final.
Yeah,
that just tells me that Gatland actively doesn't want England to win the final, like anyone but England. And I know that's a Welsh thing, but you can't. If England weren't in the final and Wales were, I would be supporting Wales.
Maybe it wasn't England. Maybe it was just Eddie Jones who doesn't want to win the final. Maybe he likes England play, but he couldn't stand Eddie Jones winning it.
Yeah, well, I think you might have to get used to it, don't you?
Yeah. Ches and Colby's in for South Africa. That's massive.
Yeah.
That is huge.
It was one of those things, like, unless they play a completely different game plan, what's the point in having Cheslin Kolbe and Vili Leroux? What's the point? And Mapimpi. Against good teams, they don't do anything.
Maybe not offset piece, mate, but certainly counter-attack where they're fielding kicks. They'll have loads of opportunity to attack. They're going to have to change. We spoke about this last time. They will have to change. They cannot play the same way as they did against Wales because they'll just get dominated in the contact area. So they're going to have to do something different. They're going to have to try something. They're going to have a few surprises. There's no way they'll win like they did against Wales. Absolutely no way. So I think they will. I think they will come up with something different. I think they will be a little bit more creative, because when you've got back three like South Africa have got, it is just wasted. offset piece.
Yeah.
But counter-attack, if England don't kick well or kick a little bit long, then Willy Larue and Cheslin Kolbe and Mpipi will cut them. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think you can look too much into the Wales game either way.
Okay, fella.
Yeah.
Okay, boy. I hope you're right, because obviously I want England to win, but I just don't want it to be boring. I'm having a nice day out, mate. I want to enjoy my day out.
The back row battle is the biggest one, I think.
That's the one.
That is the one.
So I said something earlier in the week to Brian Habana, and he was like, no way, mate, no way. Effectively, no, you're talking rubbish. And then Stuart Barnes actually said it in an article to the Public and has been, I expect, abused online, which is what happens. I was like, I think they should start Francois Lowe and they should drop Sir Khaleesi to the bench. They're obviously not doing that, and I didn't think they would, but I think they should, because I think the breakdown is going to be so important. And I think in Francois Lowe, you've got probably the best defensive breakdown operator in the world at the moment. He's overtaken Pocock, or he's maintained where Pocock dropped off towards the end, and Hooper dropped off in pure breakdown terms towards the end. And you've got Peter Steph Dutoy, who is the best counter-rucking forward, along with Marrow on his day, that the game has seen. So I think they should have picked him.
That's a huge call, though, isn't it? Dropping your captain.
They were never going to do it.
No, you can't. You can't do it. You can't do it.
But that doesn't mean we shouldn't say what we think. And I personally think they might well be fine, but I think they are better off with Francois Lowe on the field. I'm biased.
Because he's from Bath.
They might say I'm biased because I played with him, but I think it's the way to do it.
Well, no, you'd think you'd have a bit more insight if you played with him, because you know what he's like week in, week out. Yeah, they couldn't drop their captain, though. That would be carnage for South Africa.
Pretty punchy, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Mate, imagine that. Imagine you're dropping your Lions captain before the first test. Oh, no, they did that, didn't they?
What I'm saying is ridiculous, but it is just happens to be what I thought, but there you go.
But yeah, there's only certain people that can say it, like Stuart Barnes online.
Yeah, not me. Not me, yeah. Exactly. And Sia Khaleesi's fab, so they're not losing a huge amount. So there you have it. The team that will represent England in the 2019 Rugby World Cup final, on Saturday morning or afternoon or early evening or evening, depending where you're listening to us. Where you're watching. To keep up with any further developments between now and then, head to itv.com/rugbyworldcup2019.
We like to know what's what in the world, don't we, Tommy?
Yeah, we do. The Economist is far more than just economics and finance, David. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, arts, the environment, and of course, sport.
Yeah, and I was on the internet recently, there was an article about how little's being done to protect sports men and women from brain injuries, which is pretty topical at this stage. Some of the hits we've seen in this World Cup, holy majoli. And there was another one on how Japan's learned to love rugby, and they really, really have. From what we've witnessed, they really, really adopted it. They love it.
And what's great about The Economist, it sifts through all the noise. It focuses on the essential information. It tells the real story.
Yeah, and it's been going for over 170 years. Did you know that?
No.
Now you know.
It's for the kind of person who never stops asking questions, Dave, and wants to know why the world is that way. Why?
Yeah, and The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you've never stopped asking questions, you can get a free copy now. For your free print copy of The Economist, just text ITV to 78070.
That is ITV to 78070.
I'm Sam Warburton, and you're listening to the ITV Rugby World Cup podcast.
Now, you know, we've been trying to get Big Ben Kay on the podcast from day one, Shanko, and he's like, oh yeah, love to. And then he just mysteriously vanishes to a karaoke bar. What's the fee, he says. You know, you won't do it with that fee. Speak to his agent. I don't think he respects this podcast as a serious broadcast. That's what I don't think.
Do you know what we could pay him in? We could pay him in rugby gloves. Remember the rugby gloves he used to wear? The marigolds? We'll pay him in marigolds.
We're in the bar last night at the hotel, and this bloke comes over to me and taps me on the shoulder, and I'm talking to, you know, friends and stuff. And I was like, hello, mate. He's like, oh, how you doing? Thought I'd say hello. I said, yeah, cool. Nice one. How's it going? And he's like, yeah. Remember me? No, don't remember you. I don't lie in situations like that. Nope. And he's like, remember I massaged your calves and you said that's a bit too much pressure. You didn't like it. No, you're not ringing any bells. And he's like, Stanko, come on, Stanko. Thought I was Boris Stankovic.
Oh, you do look a little bit like him.
Not anymore, I don't. I used to. So then it's like, hang on a minute.
You do.
This isn't a joke. And I thought he was joking. It wasn't a joke. He kept going and going. And in the end, I was like, mate, wrong person. And it was quite funny. I was like, go and tell Ben Kay who you thought I looked like. Anyway, he wouldn't do it. And he like wouldn't in the end go. I was like, okay, you've made your point. You recognise me, but it's not me. He's a Kiwi. I'm English. You can tell that. Okay. See you later, mate. And then Ben came over and I said, guess who that bloke thought I was? And he's like, Boris Stankovic? Yes, straight away. And then it turns out there's this bloke has been going on and on and on and on and on at a couple of events where he's seen Ben about dropping that ball in the World Cup final to the point where it's not funny anymore. So it's one of those situations where you're like, he's in the middle of our group and it's just all of us and it's just him. He's just inserted himself into our group. And I'm like, what do we do here? And I was like, you can't really tell him to go away because you're that guy.
Do you know the best way to get rid of people like that? You just grab them by the scruff of the neck on their jersey. You lift up the belt of their jeans and you just march them out. It's so easy. So you get them on their tiptoes. You get them off balance. They're gone. But anyway, we asked Gabriel Clark to interview Ben for us instead. And sure enough, Benny, being the good guy he is, cancelled all of his plans immediately. So fair play, Ben K.
Hi, Flats and Shanks. It's Gabriel here with Ben K. In a week of weeks, Ben, you know so much about World Cup weeks. What will it be like for the England players and the England coaching team, do you think? What do you hope it's like?
Exciting, because that's the difference between, I think, getting the mindset right and making sure that the nerves don't overcome you. You need the nerves to build you up rather than suppress you. We often see in finals, in all sports, that actually the pressure inhibits the performance and people don't play quite as well as they can do. And maybe some of that's a fear of making mistakes and they go into themselves. So I think from a coach's perspective, it's about not allowing the pressure to build too much that it fatigues the players throughout the week, and you build it towards the end of the week, but you make sure that you, as much as possible, you enjoy the week.
Where do you place that win over New Zealand by England as a one-off?
Without a doubt, 100%, and I've spoken to all the other 2003 boys that are here. We all say that's the best performance England have ever had.
And that is fantastic in itself, but it was notable, really notable afterwards, immediately afterwards, how they had quickly shifted on, and there was really no celebrating.
I don't know whether anyone had said anything, but I certainly remember in 2003, semi-final stage, Phil Larder, our defence coach, saying, when we win this, whatever you do, do not celebrate, just walk straight off the pitch, because otherwise it looks like you've achieved what you wanted to achieve. So yeah, it's no different. Don't start doing laps of honours. And probably in 2007, there was an element of sort of high-fiving each other and a bit of a lap of honour and totally different scenarios, yeah, because 2003, we had gone into the tournament as number one team in the world, favourites to win it, and we hadn't got the job done. In 2007, I think there's a little bit of, you look back with and forget some of the situations we were in, you know, because we got to the final, people forgot what had happened in the lead-up to the tournament, you know, coaches leaving, yeah, sort of a very short time frame.
Thrashed by South Africa in the pool stage.
Thrashed by South Africa, beaten by Argentina at Twickenham in the build-up. And it was almost every stage of recovery needed to be celebrated. And the Australia quarter-final for me in 2007 was my favourite ever England experience, because driving into the stadium in Marseille, you could see all the England fans trudging there, because obviously you buy your tickets months in advance, and they trudged out, well, we might as well go and enjoy a weekend in Marseille, we'll have to go to the game because we've got the tickets, trudging in, and you could almost feel the atmosphere change in the stadium as the game went on, and they were going, Christ, we might win this, you know, they genuinely had no thoughts that we might beat Australia. I think Australia felt the same thing. So just that journey meant that when you got to the semi-final, and obviously against France as well, and probably that it was a tighter game, you know, it's a lot easier not to celebrate when 5 minutes from the end you're pretty sure you've got this, as the England boys did on Saturday. So yeah, I think that's an element of it, but certainly I can remember sort of a little bit of walking around waving at the crowd after we beat France in 2007.
Well, just in terms of a personal way in which you prepare, I mean, going to the 2003 final, and that in itself, the closest World Cup final on record thus far, that was such a physically demanding game, but also mentally such a demanding game. It appeared to be the way for many of the players against New Zealand on Saturday. Maro Itoje has talked about never being as shattered mentally.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a factor rolling on into this final? Is there a danger maybe of a certain come down that the England players might have to face?
100%. Yeah. How do you raise the intensity levels? Because actually, let's be honest, it's very unlikely they're going to hit the performance standards they hit last Saturday, but they don't necessarily have to. You know, they're playing a different side, but they just need to get enough of it right. And I guess mentally as well, one thing that Eddie Jones might have to be getting across is it doesn't matter if you don't. If they're thinking halfway through the game, we're not playing as well as we did last week, that can then have a negative impact. So, but also the plus side is rugby's a game of momentum. World Cups are about momentum. Once you get on a roll and the confidence is there, the belief is there, and it just, everything seems to flow for you. So it's about harnessing that rather than thinking, well, it's not quite as good as last week.
We've seen Johnny May, Owen Farrell this week around the hotel, because they're coming into this hotel and doing a bit of work. They look incredibly relaxed, the England players. They would do, I suppose. But deep down inside, what will they be feeling? What sort of nerves grip you in a World Cup week?
I think...
Because it is a week like no other, as much as you might want to say, treat it like another game.
And every player is different, isn't it? You know, some players want to be living it now. Some will want to be putting it totally out of their mind.
What were you like?
I probably wanted to put it out of my mind, but couldn't as much as I wanted to. So,
which is the test?
Yeah, absolutely. But it was, it's about not dwelling on it for too long. So it's good for me. It was about dipping into it every day rather than it sort of crushing you a little bit, because it does that sort of. You know, your heart rate goes up, it's fatiguing, and you want to arrive on Saturday morning fresh and excited about it, not thinking, well, I played this game on Wednesday, I'm absolutely shattered.
And did the week drag? Did the clock almost not move forward? How did Sir Clive, in particular, in the week that you won it, do things that you think, when you look back, enabled you to have that winning performance?
The quarterfinal performance against Wales wasn't what we wanted, and we'd moved up to the sort of heat of Brisbane at that stage, and we didn't have that problem in Sydney, but still we felt that we were lethargic and we'd probably overtrained in the week leading up to Wales. So the semi-final week, we actually cut the training right down from what it should be. And from a coach's perspective, you're wanting to get every single detail right. So it's very difficult to say, well, actually, I won't do that planned session. But our best performance was when we hadn't trained as much. So
there's a trust there.
Yeah. These guys are so well prepared now. It's about putting the fine details on, knowing what they've got to do to South Africa specifically. But they don't need to be learning anything new. So for me, it should be really short, sharp sessions that you leave the pitch every day wanting to do more, not thinking, God, I'm glad that's over with.
And it is a week like no other. I mean, you must get distractions. There must be calls from home, tickets, good luck messages that obviously you're going to receive and try to deal with. But those, in a way, are also distractions, things that might fatigue. How did you deal with all that?
To be honest, I think it's more of a lift, really. It's everyone. You get everyone's excitement, and you know how lucky you are to be in that situation. And the majority of them, I mean, it depends who's asking you for tickets and things, but
that long lost mate.
Yeah, exactly. But most of them are people that you'd actually love to share it with. So you sort of make an effort thinking, well, this is great, rather than I wish I wasn't sort of. And you're very lucky when you are in an international side that there are a lot of sort of admin people that can help you out with that. And the team manager's usually very good at, don't worry, I've got it for you. That's their role, really. The team manager's role is to take as much of that distraction away from you, but still be feeling that you're not letting people down.
And if you've got one piece of advice as a double finalist for the players that are there on Saturday, what would it be?
It's almost the same thing that you say to under-9s players. Just enjoy it, because it'll fly by. And regardless of how it's going, if you stop enjoying it, then you won't win the game.
It will be intriguing, but do you expect the boys of 2003, who've quite rightly lived long and proudly on that success, to be joined by another generation, 2019?
Yes, I do. I think they've got the psychology right. I think they've peaked at the right time, and it'll take an enormous effort from South Africa. South Africa are capable of stopping them, but only if they can stop England playing.
There you go. Ben Kay, thank you very much. To Eddie Jones and the England team, from the Hilton Hotel in Tokyo, and from Ben Kay and me, we wish you all the best. back to the boys.
So Ben says it's without a doubt the best performance he's ever seen from an England team. But the thing is, you don't need to play that well. All you need to do is win. And of course, he's right. I mean, it was we must stop going on about the semi-final, but it was just so unbelievably good.
Yeah, yeah.
A bloke in the lift today was started going on about the ref. The ref, we're never going to win it with that ref. We never win with, I can't remember who refed it. We never win with French refs, Irish refs. We don't win. I was like, mate, are you kidding me? Normally I don't bite. I was like, God, mate, don't do that. I was like, don't be that guy. Just get over it and be nice. God, French refs or whatever it was. I'm mate. Ben was all talking about the lead up to a big game and there's not a lot to do. And I was talking to Clive Woodward this morning and he said that they barely trained in their final week because the players fed back to him that they'd trained too much in quarter final week. So he laid off. He laid off him and said, right, I'll trust you.
And it worked.
Yeah, but I think England have trained hard this week. They've had a couple of full-on sessions. They've gone pretty hard. I think they're not mucking about. This is what's got us here. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Quite interesting.
It's the balance, isn't it? You know, you make a big call whether you lay off them a bit and you let them rest and just get themselves right or just do what you've been doing. So if you lose, you'll always look for excuses, but you've just got to do what you feel right, really, haven't you?
Yeah. Did you sleep all right before big games and Grand Slam deciders and... When you played England A at Wrexham and I smashed you, did you sleep all right before that?
No, it was quite difficult, I think. But there are options of having sleeping tablets to help you before big games because you don't want to play the game the night before in your head, do you? You don't want to put your head down on your pillow and just start thinking about the game, start thinking about who you're up against. You know, you just want to be able to switch off. You know, it's easier when you're not lying down in bed because you can keep yourself active, can't you? You can go for walks, you can go for coffee, have chats, play a bit of table tennis, whatever. But when it's quiet and your head's on that pillow, it's difficult not to think about the game. So sometimes I would take sleeping pills. Other times you'd just be so tired and exhausted from the week that you just get your head down and you'd be okay. So what do you do? I mean, I've never been in the World Cup final, so I'm sure that is just intensified by Wales A, England A at Wrexham by probably 25%.
12% max. The players just so relaxed. So I was in the... So the gym yesterday, wasn't going to mention it. And I was on you've been to the gym in this hotel, and I was on the cross trainer that you see as soon as you walk in, like right in front of the door.
Yeah.
And I was just there about 5 o'clock. No one's going to be going in. Firstly, Ben Kay walks through. I was like, brilliant. One person's seen me on the machine. That's probably the most pointless machine in the gym. And then Johnny Wilkinson walks in, fitness freak. I'm like, great, another one. And then half the England team walk in, come out the lift and walk in at exactly the same time. And they're just like, they're walking, just laughing.
I'm just imagining, like, I don't know, I feel really sorry for them. But, you know, in Russia, when they get bears to do stupid tricks, I can just imagine a bear on a cross trainer. That's, you know, that's what it would look like.
Like this morning at this coffee thing, Maro Itoji walks up to me and he's like, he's looking at me, just shaking his head, laughing. I said, he goes, mate, cross trainer. He's like, we walked in to do a recovery session. And you're on the cross trainer next to a blonde lady chatting and you're going about 3 miles an hour and just chatting. Yeah, they were mocking me.
I've never seen a man in peak physical condition on a cross trainer.
No, you haven't. Old people, fat people, men.
And I also apply that to spin.
Yes, you're right.
I know.
It's only old men and fat men that do spin and cross trainer. It's so true. I should have done 40 minutes on the treadmill, but no, not doing that. Anyway, they all found it really amusing. And it just lifted their spirits in final week. It just relieved the tension a little bit. They got to mock me and say disparaging things to me about my condition and my work ethic. I don't know. Anyway, in that tete-a-tete with Gabriel, Ben mentioned the amount of requests for tickets he got from family and friends in the week leading up to finals and big games and how it actually came as a welcome distraction. And Billy Vunipola said the same when I caught up with him earlier in the week. So that's a proper segue, that, Tommy. That has led in. That's led in to the next piece. That's what a segue is. Benny K, by the way, just like Gabe would do. Anyway, here he is.
Billy, it's not just another week. It's not just another game. It's one you'll remember for all time. So how hard is it to stay focused on the job at hand and not get carried away with what might happen on Saturday night?
I think, you know, everyone's got the same problem this week. Obviously, we've got the big game on Saturday, but I think the biggest problem is dealing with families and requests, so...
Tickets.
Yeah, that's probably a good distraction at the moment. But, you know, further down the line, you want to get honed into doing your job and all the boring rugby stuff.
And you've seen what sort of rugby has got South Africa to this final.
Yeah.
Do you expect more of the same? And do you want to be dragged into a game like that?
I think expect more of the same, but I think also expect anything to happen. When we played them in the summer in 2018, they had a wide open game with Pollard running a lot, so, and them using their wingers, and we all know about Cheslin Kolbe, so we're preparing for everything, as Eddie always does with his teams. So firstly, it's the battle up front with the forwards, as you said, massive pack, been very dominant throughout the tournament, and so we've got to meet that challenge front on, and hopefully after that we can get some traction into the game and try and play our game.
And one of the wonderful things about your performance in the semi-final against New Zealand was how much you guys seemed to, yes, play well and execute, but enjoy it. So do you think about Saturday night and think, yes, it's a big occasion, we've got to get it right, but let's have some fun?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been one of our biggest things. We talked about how together we have been. I know it sounds a bit lame sometimes, but the group really enjoys being together. And I thought that, like you said, showed on the weekend. You know, the scramble D, boys putting in big shots. You know, that has, I guess, a ripple effect on everyone else around them. I know it might be the same people all the time, but, you know, we're all there to do a job, and they do their job, and we just support them, and vice versa. And hopefully we can bring that out on Saturday again.
You've really upskilled, mate, with your presenting skills.
Cheers, fella.
Really do. Like, I reckon there's a job on the radio for you, because links are seamless at the moment with you.
Yeah. And the fact that when I've done them, I explain them to you, that really helps in broadcasting terms.
Yeah. Will South Africa play expansive? We've touched on this before. They'll have to. There's no doubt they will have to.
Yeah.
What South Africa renowned for being good at is obviously set piece, so scrum time. And you look at back at the South Africa of old, say 5, 6, 7 years ago, used to run everything off scrums with their nines. Their nines coming round, everything used to be around the 10, 12, 13 channel with blindside wingers coming through. How many times have we seen Habana scorching through in between sort of 10 and 12? I think that's where they're the strongest, because they get a good set piece, because you've got someone like Faf de Klerk running off the base of the scrum, who is a great sniper. He'll pick off anything weak, but also a good distributor. So I think that's where South Africa really need to attack England. That hinge, really, 9, 10, 12. They get a lot of momentum through there. They might get half tackles. They try and obviously pick out George Ford, as you would. It's difficult to pick someone out and target him. I think that's what they need to do, and that's where their strengths have always been. And then on the counter-attack as well, looking at loose kicks with Cheslin Kolbe, because you want him coming around the corner as well, offset piece, don't you? You want him with, I don't know, a 10, 12, behind 13, or whatever, just a block move to get Cheslin Kolbe in with a bit of space, because that step, gone. Difficult.
What South Africa need to do, boy, is buck their ideas up.
Okay. In layman terms, you got it.
Have a go at it, lads. Buck your ideas up. You're better than that semi-final.
Thanks to Gabriel and Ben and Billy for their thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, lads. Well done.
Good stuff, wasn't it?
Mm.
And Ben is going to be part of what, Flats?
He's part of our commentary team for the final. Starts at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, or, as you might also say it, 7 a.m. Kickoff at 9 a.m. It's a two-hour build-up, Tommy. That's a long time. So I want everyone to dig in.
Because you feature heavily.
I don't know if I feature that heavily, actually. A couple of bits, I expect.
We're obviously neutral on this pod, aren't we, Flat? So it's important to get a South African perspective on the game. Argyle Douglas has been speaking to Brian Abana for us, who was in the Springbok side that beat Ben Kay and a few of his mates back in 2007.
So here we are on the eve of a momentous World Cup final. But Brian, you know exactly what that feels like, having been in that position and lifted the trophy at the end of it. So now that you're spectating and not involved, how do you feel about this one?
I've had a bit of a think over the last 48 hours, 72 hours, how one starts feeling about us. I think this tournament in particular for me, in a way, bittersweet, because you're not playing for the first time after three tournaments being involved, but then just the emotional roller coaster of seeing how the Springbok side has really galvanized over the course of the last 6 weeks and got themselves an opportunity, you know, as only one of two teams to win this final, and having being a little boy in 95 and being inspired to pick up the game and then be a part of that 2007 success was an incredibly momentous occasion for us as a team. And, you know, in South Africa, that is a country that has so many intricacies that no other rugby-playing country in the nation, in the world, has to deal with. To have sport and rugby in particular give our country back so much, you know, to potentially think that someone like Siya Kolisi, who growing up as a young boy wasn't worried about, you know, where his rugby boots were coming from, you know, what type of sport he was playing. He was worried about where his next meal's coming from. You know, he watched 2007 Rugby World Cup final in a tavern because his family didn't own a TV. So you put all those things together and you see how this team has grown over the course of the last 18 months. And, you know, from a South African perspective, as tough as it is going to be, you know, there's just so much riding on this in terms of the potential it has to inspire and be a catalyst in a country where sport has given it so much.
Because in 95, we saw what it did for the Rainbow Nation and Nelson Mandela's involvement at the final, Francois Pienaar wearing the jersey. It was a significant moment in the country's history. To see somebody like Siya Kolisi lift a World Cup, what could that mean for the country? It's one of those occasions, isn't it, where it's a little bit bigger than the sport?
It is one of those occasions, Jill, that it can become bigger than the sport, I think. Realistically, it's, you know, South Africa, politically, economically, it's going through some tough times, and we don't want sport to overshadow, you know, what could be going wrong. But it, you know, sport just gives that glimmer of hope, and particularly for someone like Siya, who first and foremost deserves his place in the side, not only as a player but as a leader, purely because of his rugby playing ability. And go back all the way to 95, you know, you had one player of colour in the Springbok side that won a Rugby World Cup. You fast forward that, you know, 24 years on, and, you know, knowing how much effort has been put into transforming a game that was predominantly seen as a sport for only a certain particular part of our nation, it's really special. And then, you know, you hear about Siya's story, you hear his development coming to fruition over the course of a long period of time. And, I mean, like I heard in this week, I think his wife, Rachel, put a post out of his dad's actually leaving South Africa for the first time ever to come watch him in a final. And you put all those emotions together, and, you know, I said, you're getting goosebumps, because it is more than just, and, you know, we hurt as rugby players, you hurt, and, you know, you, if you don't do it, it's not ideal, but sometimes it's just bigger than the moment. And I think for Siya to potentially be in that position to be wearing that same number 6 Springbok jersey as Nelson Mandela was wearing in 1995, and how momentous that would be for him, for this team, for our country, it's pretty difficult to put into words.
What kind of advice would you give the players then this week, knowing the magnitude of what's in front of them and knowing the challenge that they're going to face from a very, very strong England side?
First and foremost, it would be to potentially shut out all the white noise. There's been a lot of criticism around the Springboks' style of play, around the boring way that they're playing the game. And I think for me, it would be first and foremost to enjoy the occasion, because like your test debut, like your career, it just goes by so quickly. And there's the media attention, there's the family, the friends. And I can imagine the request for tickets has probably increased tenfold over the course of the last couple of days. But I think it's for the players. And as a professional athlete, you want to be at the pinnacle of your sport. You know, you sacrifice, you dedicate, you give so much of your time, of your effort, of yourself to be able to get to this point. And in a way, you look back, if it goes well or if it doesn't go well, and you sort of think, how did it go by in a blink of an eye? And for my advice to the players would be to enjoy, because they've done something absolutely magnificent in getting to a position where the whole rugby world wrote them off 18 months ago. And knowing the journey they've gone on, I think they've been together for a ridiculous stat, like 10 weeks now, you know, and they've got less than 24, 48 hours to do something that can actually glue them together for the rest of their lives. And I think for them to enjoy that moment, to go out there and live their passion, because, yeah, like I said, it does go by so quickly, but if it does go by successfully, it lives with you eternally.
Give me goosebumps. Listen, you've been like a bouncing ball from the beginning of this tournament. I've never seen somebody with more energy and enthusiasm and excitement for the game of rugby. How are you going to manage yourself over the course of that match?
I'm not quite sure how we're going to do in studio for the amount of time. And I was pretty squashed between three very vocal Welshmen last weekend, and I had to bite my tongue a little bit. I don't know, Sir Clive might be sitting next to me, so that might be a little bit different in studio. But I think, you know, being able to, first and foremost, if one puts into into thought what this last 8 weeks was, and you get a bit emotional because it has been so brilliant. The Japanese culture, the Japanese people, the stadia, the emotions felt. I said it post that Scotland-Japan game. It's been one of the most extraordinary experiences I've ever had in my life, having never come to this country before 2019 and having got to experience, you know, with a brilliant ITV crew, with, you know, so many amazing people that have made this tournament incredibly special. You know, post the typhoon where, you know, we were sort of boarded up in a hotel for 24 hours, but then to see how this country and this nation actually galvanized together was incredible. So how am I going to compose myself for 80 minutes on Saturday? We'll potentially see if that does happen or not, Jelly. But it's brilliant. I think to get in a World Cup final against an England side that was incredibly commanding against a very strong New Zealand side last week, you know, a repeat of 2007. And every time the British and Irish Lions have toured South Africa, they have been world champions. And there's a tour coming along in 2021. So we'll see how that goes.
Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Brian was really good on the importance of Sir Khaleesi and his importance to the nation. And I absolutely know all about that, and I don't disregard any of that.
You still wouldn't pick him, though, would you? You still wouldn't pick him, though. No, you wouldn't.
No.
Yeah.
No, not ahead of Francois for this game. And there's a lot more to it than rugby, of course. But I do think he's a wonderful player. And he's not there because he's uniting a nation. He happens to unite a nation. He's there on merit because he's brilliant and he's got a ton of caps for a reason. He's a mega athlete. Like, you walk past the bloke and it's like, whoa. I don't know if you can see on telly how big he is, but he is an absolute specimen. So I completely get it. I was just talking purely about tactics and the breakdown, really.
Yeah.
And of course, Brian talking about 95, hugely inspiring. I was at an event the other night with Michael Liner, and Francois Pienaar was there talking about 95, and it was like, Francois wasn't giving it the beans. He was just reporting it as he remembered it with a smile on his face. But it was like proper goosebump time. It was really awesome. Really good.
Thanks to Jill and Brian for that. As Brian said, he's part of the ITV studio team in the stadium on Saturday.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Shank Boy, how much are you looking forward to the playoff on Friday night? Go, give me a number.
Of what?
Well, 1 to 10. How much are you looking forward to it?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I reckon an 8. An 8.
Liar.
I am looking forward to it because it's a chance to try and beat the All Blacks. It's a send-off for Gats. This is his last game. We knew there was going to be two games left after the quarter-final. But I'm a little bit gutted that we've lost so many players. That's the only thing, because you want to give a really good account for yourself. If you're going to beat the All Blacks, you need to copy what England did, 80 minutes. You need your best players on the field. Unfortunately, we lost two fullbacks. We've lost George North on the wing. But we've still got Alan Wynne-Jones. We've still got a good back row. James Davis is playing. Massive chance for him. I didn't think John Davis was going to be fit because he didn't look like he was running freely in the semi-final. But obviously, an extra week has helped him. So it's a good chance for a lot of these players. Owen Lane, the Lane train from Cardiff Blues, been called up straight on the wing to start. Have that. And you're sort of hoping that the All Blacks will pick a really weakened team. There's no weakened team, whatever they pick. Barrett, 15. Moanga, 10. Ryan Crotty, desperate to play. Sonny Bill Williams hasn't featured that much.
Who do you reckon's going to win? Don't lie.
I think the All Blacks will win. It's going to be really difficult for the Welsh team. They'll obviously go in confidently, but when you look at the team and you look at the players that are missing through injury, it's a really weakened team. It's not saying they can't do it at all, but it's going to be tough for them. But it's a good opportunity to see for players to play against the best, because that is the only way you improve. You don't improve.
You're so media trained.
You don't improve by playing the likes of Romania and Japan like I used to.
You're so media trained. You're like Harry Kane after a match.
You improve by playing the best of the best. And
wake me up when you're done, mate.
Well, have you ever played the All Blacks?
Yeah, 1-4 out of 4.
No, exactly.
Are you going to Warren Gatland's leaving do?
Yeah, I think so.
Where is it?
It's in New Zealand. You fly me out.
What's the dress code?
Black tie, obviously.
All black tie, get it?
All black. So in terms of Gats's legacy, it's been incredible what he's done with Wales. From coming in 2008 to turning us into a proper drilled professional outfit. And obviously took a lot of stick, you know, 3 or 4 years into his reign as Welsh coach, because everyone was talking about playing the same way and adapting. And I think he's changed that around a bit. I think we've become less predictable like we were at the start. He's developed a team full of winners. You know, you think about when 15 years ago you go against playing Australia and South Africa and you'd hoped you'd win, but you never really thought deep down that you would. Different with Six Nations because of what Wales have done there. But when you play in the Southern Hemisphere, I think in the back of your mind, there was still sort of 10% thinking, well, we probably and possibly could lose this. Whilst now, I think he drilled into the boys a lot more self-belief, a lot more confidence. He'll go down as the greatest Welsh coach we've ever had. And, the relationship he's got with the players, the respect he's got from the public is absolutely incredible. And I think you and I and everyone in Wales, everyone in the world, wishes him the best of luck.
We love him. We all love him. Apart from all that, he never coached me like he coached you. He's just a really good bloke. He gets it. He's funny. He's bright. He's generous. He's just a really, really good bloke. If he was your father-in-law, he'd be over the moon, wouldn't you?
Would you? Not sure. I'm not sure whether... yeah, look, he'd be a better father-in-law than Sean Edwards. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's such a good shout. That's such a good shout.
Still probably wouldn't take him as father-in-law.
And Robbie McBride, I don't know him as well as a bloke, but you don't want a father-in-law who looks that terrifying and could rip your arms off. You don't want that.
He won Wales' strongest amateur man.
Yeah, you want a father-in-law who can beat in a fight if it comes to it.
Yeah, I think I'd rather Sam Vesti as a father-in-law, all right?
hey.
Richie Reese, I'd rather as a father-in-law.
Richie Reese, yeah, you'd have him easy. It'd be like fighting a glass of water, wouldn't it?
Or you could just dominate him, couldn't you? In every aspect, your chat, physically.
Yeah, but the thing is, let me say this. Sam Vesti looks like Rod Hull and has got really small arms no matter what he does in training. Mate, he's a hard hombre. You'd have to, I don't know how to say this without being offensive, you'd have to do a lot to beat Sam in a fight. It'd take a long time. All right, don't misjudge him.
How come his arms are so short if he weightlifts? They're not growing, are they?
No, his biceps are small.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't want to embarrass him because he'll have lads that listen to this and stuff, but I heard a rumour once, don't know if it's true or not, that his wife asked him why if he did all these weights, why hasn't he got big arms like all the other lads?
That's a kick in her teeth, isn't it?
Ah, poor old Vesto. Wales play New Zealand tomorrow morning at 9, live and exclusive on ITV. If you're listening to this podcast after the match has taken place, then head to the ITV Hub for highlights.
I'm watching that in the house, bacon sandwiches, Bubs is coming around on the TV. Relax, Avu.
Oh, you're only going to London for the final, are you?
Yeah.
Lovely. You and Bubs, naked on the sofa for bacon sarnies. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
As promised, we're going to respond to some of your feedback of our team of the semis.
Oh, God.
Flatch chosen all England pack, apart from De Jager and Vermeulen. I went for the full English. I was hungry.
Yeah. Now, Richard Wilcox said, have to say, I didn't agree with the forwards you picked to me, obviously.
I didn't either.
In the semi-final, whatever. It should have been the South African front row. First of all, it says a few things. Itoje and Diaga he agreed with, and he put Dutoy in instead of Curry. Now, Dutoy, I absolutely get that. That's a really tight one. But the front row, I'll try and say this politely. What game were you watching that you don't have the England front row? Kyle Sinclair was outrageous in that game. He was one of the best rugby players on the field. He was absolutely brilliant. And the Springbok front row did a really good job. They did their job really, really well. Mal Herbert and the Beast, really, really sharp. And Mbonambi, he's a top player, good at everything. But compare the ball play. Like the set piece was fine, but compare the ball play. I mean, it's just a different level. So I'm not having that. I'm sorry.
I'm with you. What about this one though, mate? Richard Hansen says he can understand the number 8 decision. He thought it was quite marginal, but I'm with you, Rich Hansen. How on earth does Laws miss out? He was,
I know,
supreme. You've dropped a clanger there, mate.
No, I haven't.
Okay, sorry. No, you haven't.
No, I haven't. The two best second rows at this World Cup, Amaro Itoje and Lo Diaga, they're the two best.
Okay.
I've watched all the games. I've watched every minute. They are the best, and they both performed at the weekend. So Courtney was immense, I thought, but basically, I didn't want to pick all from one team just for variety. And if there was a 50-50, which that was, I chose a South African lad. And Dutoy and Curry was a tight one as well.
Mm.
Toasted Giant, Will Tom and RB all say Faf deserves to be at 9 ahead of Ben Youngs. Answer that.
Faf deserves to be ahead of Ben Youngs. All he did was kick at the weekend. And some of them weren't even great.
Most of them weren't great.
Okay, most of them weren't great. You're right.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me. You know what I'm trying to get at. But I just didn't think he did enough in the game. I thought all he did was box kick. Not his greatest performance, but did enough to win. Whilst I thought Ben Youngs, the tempo, His service was really good all the way through. So that is why Toasted Giant, Will, Tom and RB, I picked Ben Youngs. Now, if you want to pick Faf, you go for it.
Yeah, but I thought Ben Youngs was streets ahead. Gareth Cornelius said he'd have Diolande in over Tuolangi because he's the best back on display in the second semi. It's fine, but that's fine. If you didn't watch the first semi, you would definitely pick Diolande. But if you watch both, it might be different, Tommy.
Of course it is. Defensively, Tuolangi was brilliant. Diolande carries really hard, tackles really hard. Wouldn't say he's limited, but that is his strength, really. Whilst you look at Tuolangi, there's far more to his game, in my opinion, than Diolande. So that's why Tuolangi was in. And also, England beat the All Blacks. Let's not forget that, okay?
Yeah, lots of people asked the Diolande question. You've answered that. Dan Weasel, yeah, good name, Dan. Johnny May's a great player. He said, Johnny May's a great player. Ordinarily, I'd definitely pick him. But he talks himself out of it here. He says, but he didn't look fully fit and came off after 50-odd minutes. So he was the best in the semis, question mark. Actually, of the four, he probably was for the time he was on the field. So fair enough. So he's come back around.
Well, hold on. Yeah, Dan Weasel, one of the Weasley brothers. Well done, mate. You realised you made your mistake and you corrected yourself. Who else would you pick on the wing?
Well, the South African wingers, there was no point in South Africa having a back three last weekend. They didn't need them.
No, there wasn't. The Welsh wingers, we didn't see any of them. George North pulled a hamstring, he was off. Josh Adams didn't see much ball at all. So you can only go to the New Zealand wingers. But I thought the whole England team outplayed the whole of the New Zealand team. So there we have it. That's enough, isn't it? That is enough.
That'll do, boy, won't it?
Time for a couple more film quote reviews from iTunes before we go. Don't forget to keep reviewing this pod with film quote reviews, please. Give us 5 stars. Starting from one from Chock, who brings to mind a short piece you did to camera the other day in your Black Ops gear, David.
I'm just wearing a black T-shirt.
Yes, Black Ops, isn't it? It's a good one. Chuck's got no blades, no bows. Leave your weapons here. No blades, no bows. Leave your weapons here.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Now you do it. I remember that. You've actually remembered it for me.
To the trees!
That's good.
What do we need and which the trees cannot provide?
Wow, you've watched this too much. Do you want to pick another one?
The Painted Man, he haunts my dreams. That's the witch. From Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
You know in Predator when Blaine gets hit and he's like, you're bleeding, and he's like, I ain't got time to bleed. Everyone knows that line. Apparently Mike Teague once, in an international playing for England obviously, Richard Hill the scrum half, said to him, Teague, you're bleeding in the middle, and he stood up and said, I ain't got time to bleed in the middle of the field.
Do you know why? That's because I read this before. That's because they watched Predator in the week leading up to the game, yeah.
I bet it was on a massive telly wheeled into a meeting room.
Bamoa, he's got, I'm a cook, just a lowly cook. That's Steven Seagal in Under Siege. I didn't know that. I never, ever would have got that.
Good one, Bamoa. You found one that no one knows.
Erica Erickson in Under Siege, coming out of the cake. Great scene. Oh, love that.
I love cake. Just as Rugby World Cup is drawing to a close, Tommy, so is the final episode the ITV STV Rugby World Cup podcast with me and thee. It's nearly upon us, the final episode. We'll be back, Tommy, when the battle's lost and won for one last hurrah.
Rah, rah, rah.
Good luck, everyone.